Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Beverage Chronicles. Gary Monteroso here. Hope everyone is having a good week. And we want to start with some news coming out of Philadelphia, and that is that Crime and Punishment Brewing, located on Girard Avenue, unfortunately is announcing its closing as of April 12th. Owner and brewer Mike Paul attributed the closure to a mix of financial difficulties and personal fatigue after a decade of operation. Now, Crime and Punishment was founded in 2015, and it was the first brewery to establish itself in Brewery Town following the closure of the short-lived Red Bell Brewing back in 2002. The neighborhood earned its name in the early 20th century when it was home to over a dozen breweries situated between 25th and 33rd Streets and Girard and Glenwood Avenues. Now, when this brewery opened, the craft beer industry was experiencing significant growth, with breweries launching at an average rate of about 1.5 per day in 2014, as reported by the Brewers Association. However, I must be honest, let's face the fact that the drinking culture has evolved over the past 10 years, and consumers are favoring ready-to-drink mixed beverages, wine, cider, craft spirits, and non-alcohol options. And this shift probably reflects a change in how younger generations perceive alcohol consumption. Now, Mike Paul remarked by saying, "If macro beer was our dad's beer, I think maybe beer or alcohol in general is like dad's thing to the younger generation," referencing the trend of other local craft breweries closing down. Throughout its decade-long journey, Crime and Punishment produced over 500 unique beer batches from its seven-barrel brewhouse, including popular selections such as Disturbing the Beets, which was a wild ale infused with beet juice, the Grud Inquisitor, a Polish-style sour brewed with oak-smoked wheat, and Space Race, a hazy IPA made with oats. The brewery only produced about 350 barrels annually, and they never really aimed for distribution, which was a strategy that has led many other breweries to face financial strain. Paul preferred to maintain a smaller operation rather than expand indefinitely. However, the increasing demand for canned beer prompted him to invest in a canning line. He had mentioned that at one point they were in the process of establishing a canning line, but during the COVID period, they opted to purchase one instead. He did say that the profit margins on pints sold at the bar are where craft beer truly thrives, which is certainly true, and the canning process is quite inefficient. Brewery Town has also undergone significant changes. In the past several months, the area welcomed a renowned bakery and highly anticipated Filipino all-day cafe, building on the momentum generated by local businesses such as Rye Brew Sandwich and Bottle Shop, Otto's Tap Room and Grill, Cafe Don Pedro Coffee Roasters, Spot Burgers, and Together Skateboarding and Coffee. Despite the increase in development, it hasn't necessarily benefited the brewery's operations. Now, Paul observed this. Brewery Town used to be an affordable and appealing post-college destination for many, but that perception has shifted with the recent developments. The demographic now residing there seems less inclined to visit Crime and Punishment. He also added they might be drawn to the proximity of Fairmount Park or easy access to Route 76, but it appears to be a different crowd that may not resonate with the Girard Avenue culture. Paul had anticipated the closure for approximately a year and a half, and he informed his staff just a couple of months ago about the timeline for closing the business. He and his partners are in the process of selling the property, which is located at 2711 West Girard Avenue. He did not care to disclose details about a buyer. And unfortunately, once again, Brewerytown will be without a brewery. Crime and punishment contributed significantly to the neighborhood, Paul reflected, as he prepares for a career transition and looks forward to spending more time with his family. He said, I feel a sense of sadness knowing it won't be there for the community. Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I don't feel this is the swan song for Mike Paul. And I have a suspicion you're going to be hearing about him again relatively soon. Next, as you know, one of our esteemed regulars is Michelle Lamb, and she is the owner and CEO of Brooklyn Night Media. She has contributed some remarkable marketing and public relations tips for businesses. And Michelle is she's kind of spreading her wings a little bit, going out on the road, and we're incorporating her into a few interviews. She's going to be doing that for us as well. We have her first one today. And she's going to be talking with a representative from really a phenomenal Indian whiskey brand called Rampur, produced by Rampur Distillery. And they're certainly one of India's finest, largest spirits manufacturers. The distillery has been in operation for quite a few years, has a long history of producing spirits, and its premium whiskey line really is gaining international recognition, especially in recent years. I think one that kind of stands out is their single malt whiskey, which is known for its smooth, complex flavor profile and heritage. Unlike Scotch whiskey, which matures in a cool climate, Rampur whiskey benefits from India's hotter climate, which accelerates the aging process and gives it a distinct richness and depth. So let's hear from Michelle Lamb.
I'm Michelle Lamb with Beverage Chronicles, and I'm here at the New York City Whiskey and Spirits Festival, speaking with some of the top spirits brands to learn more about their craft and what makes them stand out in the industry. Can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your brand?
Sure. My name is Eddie Soto. I'm the director of sales for SG Worldwide. We're actually the importers of Rampur Distillery whiskeys and gins throughout the United States.
What makes your spirit unique compared to others?
Well, we have a vast Indian portfolio. So Indian spirits are completely different than most spirits out there. The fact where the location, where it's from, everything in general, the maturation process completely is different than most and very unique experience.
For someone trying your spirit for the very first time, how would you recommend enjoying it?
Like most spirits, like most of anything, you definitely want to sample it neat. You definitely want to get the flavor, the full on the full disclosure of everything that Indian whiskey has, from the 6-row barley to the Himalayan water. You want to experience all that just the way it is. Then later on, you can add your ice, you can add your water, and make it all however you want.
Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Where can our audience find your products and follow your journey?
Absolutely. So obviously we're on social media, so you can follow us there. But also you can find us at Costco's. You can find us at Total Wines. We're in 30 states throughout the United States. And so it's just a matter of finding your local store that can carry us.
Thank you.
Awesome.
What is up, everybody? Rachel Benkowski here, aka Brews with Beerkowski, and I am here to talk to you today about some beer history. I'm a certified Cicerone and I am a historian, and today we're going to be talking about two beers that often get confused, porter and stout. So let's get nerdy. Stout and porter beers both have rich histories that trace back to London in the 18th century, and understanding their origins reveals much about the role of beer in working class culture during that time. The story begins with porter, a dark, robust beer that became immensely popular in London in the early 1700s. Porter was initially brewed by mixing together various types of beer, including stronger, darker ales. It was created for the working class, specifically the porters, who are the laborers carrying goods throughout the streets of London. These workers needed a hearty, sustainable drink to keep them fueled throughout their long shifts. By the 1720s, porter was becoming the drink of choice among London's working class, and it became widely available in taverns and alehouses throughout the city. Porter gained such popularity that it was brewed in large quantities, and by the mid-18th century, it was being exported beyond London to other parts of Britain and even abroad. It was thick, full-bodied, and higher in alcohol content compared with lighter beers, which made it well-suited for the working conditions of the time. With its dark, roasted flavor and rich texture, porter was a drink that not only provided sustenance, but also offered a sense of comfort at the end of a hard day's work. By the late 1700s, brewers began to experiment with stronger variations of porter, and this is where stout comes in. The term stout originally referred to the strength of the beer, not necessarily the flavor. A stout porter was a stronger version of the original porter with a higher alcohol content and fuller, more intense flavors. Over time, the term stout began to be used to describe beers that were darker and richer than traditional porters. By the 1800s, stout had developed its own distinct identity. The most famous type of stout was probably dry Irish stout, or also known as Irish stout, most closely associated with Guinness, a brewery founded in Dublin in 1759. The beer was brewed with roasted barley, which gave it a characteristic dark color and slightly bitter flavor. Guinness's version of dry stout became incredibly popular in the 19th century, and it solidified the association of stouts with dark, dry, and slightly bitter beers. However, many other versions of stout emerged, including sweet stouts and oatmeal stouts, each with different flavor profiles. Both stout and porter were integral to the culture of London during the 18th and 19th centuries. For the workers, beer was not just a beverage, it was a key part of daily life. In an era where clean water wasn't always available or safe to drink, beer was a safe option. The alcohol content helped kill harmful bacteria, making beer a vital source of hydration. Additionally, beer provided essential calories and nutrients for hardworking individuals. Many workers would drink beer at lunch and after their shifts to unwind. In a city with long working hours and poor living conditions, beer offered a sense of community, relaxation, and sustenance. By the 1800s, the Industrial Revolution had transformed London into a bustling metropolis, and beer remained a staple in the working class diet. As brewing techniques improved and larger-scale breweries emerged, porter and stout continued to dominate the beer scene. Their deep, rich flavors were the perfect antidote to the harsh realities of factory life and the heavy physical labor that characterized the period. The development of beer culture in London during this time helped to shape the beer industry as we know it today. Both porter and stout were essential to the workers in London in the 18th and 19th centuries. Porter is the beer that fueled the laborers in London and became a symbol of the city's industrial heart. Stout is a stronger version of the porter and evolved over time and became a defining beer style, most famously represented by Guinness. These beers were more than just drinks. They were a crucial part of daily life, helping workers stay hydrated, nourished, and connected in a rapidly changing world.
A recent report on direct-to-consumer beer shipping, partly put together by the Brewers Association, shows that a lot of Americans are eager for easier access to craft beer through direct shipping. According to a Harris Poll survey, 83% of regular craft beer enthusiasts and 64% of all legal-age Americans are in favor of changing current laws to allow beer shipping in more states. At the moment, only 12 states and Washington, D.C. permit direct-to-consumer beer shipping, while 47 states and the District of Columbia allow it for wine. Clearly, that doesn't add up. The data indicates that 76% of regular craft beer drinkers would purchase more if they could get it through direct-to-consumer shipping. Even more interesting, 86% would be more inclined to try craft beers from other states if they could order them online and have them shipped. The survey was conducted by the Harris Poll from January 7th to 9th of 2025, involving 2,021 U.S. adults age 21 and older, with 632 of them drinking craft beer at least once a month. The sample data is accurate within plus or minus 2.5 percentage points at a 95% confidence level. The survey revealed that 95% of regular craft beer drinkers who buy through direct-to-consumer would still seek out the same brands in stores, bars, and restaurants. Rather than replacing traditional sales, direct-to-consumer could actually enhance them by introducing consumers to new breweries they might not have discovered otherwise. And that's this week's Beverage Chronicles. See you next week.